This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 8 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, we have two guests, a submissive and a slave. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max. And sitting across the desk from me is the ever-lovely Beast. How are you, sir?
Ever-lovely. We have to check your prescription, Woody.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking left and right of you.
Ah, now we are talking lovely. To the left of me, Woody, is the lovely Lee. And to the right of me is the lovely Chrissy. You're on the wrong side of the table.
I can see that.
So the young ladies are here today for us to throw some questions at them as tops to bottoms and for them to pitch a few back at us, I'm sure, as bottoms to questions to the tops.
I think that's going to be interesting because everybody has expectations for themselves, having their needs met. Tops want to have their needs met, but bottoms want to have their needs met also. So the ladies left and right of you are both submissives, and one even has slave tendencies.
Yes, she does. I understand she heads up a Masters and Slaves Together chapter.
That's correct. It's very interesting and informative.
But I think that we would both describe both of those as bottoms also, wouldn't we?
We would.
Since it's a continuum that we're talking about, the bottom is en route to being a submissive or being a slave. So I identify as a top, a dominant, sometimes a master. And you?
Certainly a top and certainly a dominant. I was a master once, but I gave it up for Lent.
We are in the middle of Lent, so will you pick it back up at the end?
Probably not.
It's a heavy burden being a master.
It is, and I like it the way it is. In one of the other episodes, we started with a bunch of labels. Let's throw out the labels that are sitting around the table. We just identified as tops and dominants and you as a master. So how does the lovely Chrissy come in on that?
You said bottom, submissive, and slave is a continuum. And I agree that it is a continuum, although some bottoms are submissive and some submissives are slaves. But I don't know that it always goes the other way.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't go always the other way.
Well, you can be a bottom. And you can be submissive. Can you be submissive and be a bottom? Can you be a bottom and be a slave? They're all different. It's a continuum, but they're all different.
The other variable in there is who you're bottoming to.
Very true. And how much control you want to give to that person.
I think that most of these, the same person may have different labels in different situations with different partners. For example, you may be a bottom to your play partner and a submissive to in a more long-term relationship, and you may have crossed into being a slave at times in another relationship. Do you tend to agree, ladies?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Well, I've also known the dynamic that I may have a submissive, but my submissive may be a top to somebody that submits to her. So that is also a possibility.
And that blows people's minds.
It does.
And it blows people's minds when you talk about the top side. What really kills me is this is not pertaining to bottom submissive slaves or whatever. It's sadist or masochism. People can't understand that you can be a dominant and be a masochist. They think that only submissives or bottoms are masochistic. And that's not at all the way it is.
Well, they're only labels, you know.
That's true.
And they're fluid. But you are correct. You can mix up these labels in the same person on a given day or a given week. Those labels may be shifting for a person.
For sure. I know someone who's a slave, also outside of that master-slave relationship, a top and a sadist. But to her master, she's a masochist. So how is that a complicated person?
Very.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be that complicated because they are just labels. It's how you feel at the time with whom you're with at the time.
I agree. I'm totally on the same page as you are.
Woody, that comes back to my favorite three words. Communication, communication, communication.
How true. So, Miss Lee, how do you ring in on this?
Well, I consider myself a submissive, and I'm submissive to my husband, who's also my dominant. And also, he has other partners. We consider ourselves poly. it's not something I can't just pick out a label, submissive, slave, bottom, top, and then all of a sudden that's who I am. I identify as a submissive because that is who I feel like I am inside. Now, I've topped other people plainly, but it's not something that I feel. And I know this is so hard to understand, but we all have different things in this lifestyle that we identify with, that we enjoy, that speaks to us. I listened to a master who was a male gay man who was married to a lesbian dominant woman. She was his slave, but she also had submissives who submitted to her. And that was a weird dynamic.
That hurts my brain just thinking about it.
But Woody, the beauty of it is, do we really have to fully understand their relationship? We have to respect it, but it's their relationship to live. And I think the respect is one thing that we struggle with sometimes. We try to label things and put them in boxes when we should be just respecting the person's decisions.
I agree, labels get in the way, but we have to have some terminology and some common words so people can talk. I know I hate to be boxed. I'm much too free for that. And it's necessary. Doesn't mean I like it, but it's necessary.
We take FetLife as kind of the central communication point for this lifestyle. Everything on that site relies on labels. Everybody is a top or a bottom, a dominant, a submissive, gay, straight, multisexual, whatever the label is that you are. It's a starting point, a jumping off point for meeting people. Once you have established rapport with somebody, then it can be more fluid than that.
Definitely the label list on Fed, I've watched it over the few years I've been a member. It's grown and it's grown and it's grown and it's grown. And I haven't looked at it in the last couple months. But there was titles that I found very interesting. Rope top, rope bottom, pets, furries, packs. There's all sorts of combinations in there that I had never considered, but obviously there are a large group of people that use these labels to describe or identify themselves.
One of the other labels that pops up there is house and family and things like that. A member of a house.
Leather family.
Leather family.
I think we have a distinction between leather family and family, both on the site, because
mm-hmm.
they each bring up a different connotation in people's minds. Woody, moving over to the other side. Ladies.
Yes, sir.
Talk about the dominant master top side. Does it matter the terms that we self-identify ourselves with to your attraction to an individual?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes.
I wouldn't be attracted to someone who claims to be a master because I have very definite definitions in my own mind of what a master is. Now, it doesn't mean that every master is like the ones that I daydream about or think about. Everybody identifies as something, but it doesn't mean that everybody's identification is the same. You know?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For anybody.
So you're saying, Lee, that it's a jumping off point. Your jumping off point, you wouldn't be attracted to a person identifies as a master, that person may not be able to open a conversation with you because of this identifier?
No, I mean, I don't discriminate.
Equal opportunity.
Well, but it's sexual preference also.
True, yes, it is.
I don't consider myself a slave or slave-wired, so therefore most masters wouldn't be attracted to me in a sexual way or in a service way because I'm not service wired. I don't want to kneel at your feet. I don't want to do what you tell me to do. I enjoy the play aspect of my relationship with my dominant or top. Those people in my mind are people that I can identify with, and that it doesn't have to be male. It could be female, a female top or a female dame. I could play with them as well because they don't expect anything from me other than play, whereas a master expects his slave or a slave to do certain things that are service oriented, whatever you have agreed upon, I guess.
Now, for me, I'm on the other side. I'm slave wired for sure. And it's gotten me in trouble before because I didn't have good judgment and I didn't have good boundaries. And I look at men, particularly, I'm attracted to men. Some women really float my boat, but mostly men. And so I look to see what qualities they have long before I even think about anything other than who is this person. And they may identify as dom, which is great, but if I see something in them that I think is a quality that I consider to be masterful, then that's someone that I'm going to gravitate to because those needs are deep in me and I need to have them met. I need to have structure and service in that regard. I need that. I agree that most of the people that I meet that boast they're a master, no, sorry, you're not. Legend in your own mind, maybe. But
so true, Chrissy.
But that brings into, we have the self-identifying labels that we put on ourselves. Then we have the labels that others see in us that may not match.
Perception.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You really have to be open to listening to what others are seeing in you and listening and to seeing, but to what how others perceive you to be. And you may have to adjust your labels to match that to be more in line with the conversation.
So years ago, the internet brought us the famous internet master, just add water.
I met a few of those.
And yeah. Stir.
Me too.
Well, unfortunately,
that was a no-bake recipe also. You add water, you stir, and
voila.
You have a master. There was no baking. There was no tempering
right.
required.
Dare I say there was no training?
Definitely. The next words spoken were kneel, bitch.
Oh, you mean the same way it is today with the 20-year-olds who come on to FetLife and say that they are a master. And,
well,
you know.
they're playing. That's fun. Let them play.
Role play is fine until you run out of steam. The old term, the rubber meets the road, this is where you identify as a master or not. A master in the old days, if you go back to the trades, a master is somebody that has gone up through apprentice and made master. Master bricklayers, master craftsmen, craftspeople. You can't be a master coming out of the canon when FetLife asked you to put up a label. Oh, I'd like to be a master, please. You have to earn the title. And I was told by a very famous dame that you do not get to call yourself master. Other people can call you master, but you never refer to yourself as one.
Right.
And you have to prove it.
Right. The man that I serve doesn't identify as master, but he has many, many qualities that make him one, which is why that I choose of my own volition to be there. I mean, I can leave at any time. This stuff about ownership, you can't leave. Well, yes, you can. So it's my choice. And as long as I continue to see those qualities, then I'll continue to stay where I am. I hope it's beneficial for everybody.
But we go back to, you're talking about the rising up through the system, becoming a master through your peers' recognition of the quality of your work. That's our self-perceived versus the community perception of us. If we have risen up and the community perceives us as this role, it's a much more powerful statement than if we just tack that title onto ourselves.
Well, then it's just ego. I don't have use for ego. I mean, a dominant needs to have some ego. That's part of the person, whether it's a male or a female dom, it doesn't matter. It's part of the person. It's part of their self. To be a master, you have to be able to present yourself in a confident manner. You have to be able to be consistent in what you do. You have to be able to be thoughtful in your actions. You have to be looking out for the good of whatever the situation is and not be malicious. There's, you know, certain things that a person who, in my little mind, has to carry to have that title. And some of the people that I consider masters are often not well-liked by other people because they don't take the time to get to know them. And if they did, they would probably have a different perception.
It's a very personal feeling.
Well, sure it is. Sure it is. What we do is very personal. This is a very personal thing that we're in. You know, BDSM and this whole kink culture is very personal. It can't get any more intimate than this.
Yeah, I often used to say that my relationship with my vanilla partner at one time was okay, and it was deep, and, you know, we were close as two people could be. But my relationship with my dominant was so much more, because there was this trust there that I gave my body to my dominant to do what he wanted to do pretty much at that time in my life. You know, when you're new, it's you come into it and you just, oh, yes, sir, whatever you say, sir. And, you know, you do all these things that you might not, if you think about it, you might not do. But
I do.
That's why you're a slave. And I'm a submissive. You know, I will submit to someone, but there's boundaries that I have learned over the years where I will stop and what I will do and what I won't do. So.
And with whom?
And with whom, yes. It's very important to me. Even though I have an open relationship with my husband, I really haven't had the need to go out in the world and find another partner at this time. But you never know. One may come knocking at my door.
You never know.
Oh, there he is.
Your prince cometh.
Master.
No, I can't say that word.
Well, no, you can't. That's a shame.
Yeah, that's a word that I have a hard time with. And
we're so different. It's interesting.
We are different, but we're a lot of ways we're alike.
A lot alike.
But I had a phone relationship with a master for a long time, and oh, it was just such a hard thing for me to say. I said it because he convinced me that I was slave wired. You know, you want, even as a submissive, you want to please your partner. You know, you want to do everything you can to do what it is that turns him on, just like you would in any other relationship. But to say that word master, no, it was hard for me.
Not so much. Huh?
Not so much.
You bring up a interesting segue there. In that prior relationship, Lee, were your needs being met?
You know, at first it was very, very exciting, and it was, oh my God, he's calling. I've got to answer, and I've got to be there for him, and I know I'm pleasing him, and all these things were going on in my head, and we would get on the phone with each other, and he lived like 800 miles away. I did meet him once, so it wasn't like he was a stranger to me. We would have these awesome role play scenarios over the phone where you had to use all your visualization techniques, and it just felt like you were right there, you know, that you were actually doing all these kinky things that he was talking about and you were talking about. After a while, well, you know, the same old gets a little boring. So no, my needs were not being met. You know, I can fuck myself with a dildo all by myself. You know,
amen, sister.
I don't need someone over the phone telling me to fuck myself with a dildo. Just you know, or to moan louder. you know.
All right, Meg. Miss Ryan, let's do that take again.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Where is that damn? Hold on.
She wants a dildo.
Oh, where did we lose control?
A long time ago, Winnie.
baby. Oh. Gosh, was that good for you?
Yeah. I want your telephone number, Lee.
Oh, my.
Oh, that was good. But that was the gist. You know, I would get so loud with my moaning over the phone, and he kept going, louder, baby, louder, you know. When you're not alone in the house, it does make it to be a little embarrassing.
You have to be creative.
Yeah, I mean, I tried muffling my voice with a pillow over my head.
Oh God, I love the guy that wanted me. He realized I was kinky after I tried to tell him. He drove 4 hours on a motorcycle to see me and finally realized that I was kinky. and then called me from his house. He bought me a webcam and told me, go get a paper bag, a belt, and a spoon. And I just burst out laughing. I said, what? No.
I want to hear the rest of it. I want to hear the paper bags. What's got me really confused?
I have no idea. I laughed so hard I hung up on him. And I think that he, you know, it just, yeah, that was it.
Listeners, if you have an idea with what to do with a paper bag,
a belt and a spoon.
The belt and spoon I have under control. But the paper bag, this one's got me stumped.
That is a new one for me.
Okay, I don't know what you're doing with the spoon.
Oh, all kinds of things with a spoon.
Yeah. Really? Okay.
Big and wooden.
Oh, see, I'm thinking of little shiny spoons.
My second wife was a telephone sex counselor, and she had a whole array of tools that she could make sound effects with for her telephone calls.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Chrissy, how are your needs being met, or how have they not been met in the past?
Well, my relationship is very complicated and convoluted. What can I say? Lee?
Sorry. Couldn't help myself.
Well, it's polyamorous and open, and this goes into a whole nother topic, time. There's never enough time. Everyone's busy. We have to schedule, you know, the joke about the polyamorous people. Everybody walks around with their calendars, you know, making their dates, and it's difficult. It's really, really difficult. So that's probably the biggest factor right there.
Time envy, episode 3.
Yes, and I don't know so much that it's necessarily time envy. It's just there's just not enough. And to a certain extent, time envy does come into play. I won't deny that. And that just can't be helped. I try to be mature and understand, because, you know, this is real life and it is what it is, but that's probably the biggest factor.
Time, another one of those four-letter words like work, shit, fuck. Time.
No, fuck is good. I like fuck. I say it a lot, in fact.
Play is one.
Play.
Yes, play. Yeah.
Kink. I have a question for the dominants and the masters here, the top side. If you go into a play space, would you rather play with a bottom or a submissive? Not necessarily you're submissive, but a person who is identifying as submissive, because you can be submissive and not be partnered, as opposed to a bottom.
Submissive.
Submissive for me also. The submissive is most likely a bottom, most likely, not always. But there is the mental framework for me that goes with somebody that identifies as submissive that I hope that they have. And that is part of my play, is the mental. I'm not one to Florentine floggers or tie pretty rope. I'm capable of tying rope, but that's not one of my fortes or one of my personal interests, but the headspace is. And the submissive brings the headspace. The bottom, in my mind, focuses on the physical sensations. And that's not but part of what I'm there to experience.
I'm in violent agreement with you.
Violent agreement. I have a question for you, and this was brought up to me. I have a friend who is a slave. She is really hysterical. She cracks me up all the time. And she always tells me, Chrissy, remember, you have all the control. Remember, you have all the control. Shh. Don't tell the top side. How do y'all feel about that?
You just let the cat out of the bag. We were pretending that we didn't know that already.
Meow.
There is a tremendous amount of control from the bottom, because it's the desires that the tops want to engage with.
But what if you're, I'm a no-limit slave. Do whatever you want. Oh.
In that case, I'm going to say, beast, take it.
I will find their limits within seconds, I guarantee.
You see, I don't even want to go there. I don't need to go there. It's not me.
I find it to be a very interesting exploration, and somebody that has that much gall to make that blanket statement, I enjoy bursting their bubble.
That's fine. That's a lot of energy, and you get to do it. Meanwhile, I'm going to go off into the mind space with somebody, and I'm going to make a little click.
Please do.
That was the sound of a knife coming open, because I love knife play, because it is so much mental. You make the click by an ear, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you have the attention.
Or even better, the better mind fuck, show a really big, sharp knife.
Mm-hmm.
And turn the bottom away so they can't see you.
Oh, you're giving away my secrets now.
Yes.
I've been there.
Spoiler alert. But you are so right, Woody. In order for knife play to work, there is a requirement for a suspension of belief.
Mm-hmm.
And that is totally in the mind. No submissive that I want to play with, because they're not going to be in the game long. If they go into a scene expecting knife play and expecting it to be real, that submissive is out of the gene pool very, very quickly. So it requires them to suspend belief, to believe that you're going to do something that you would never, ever actually do to them, like lay a 1-inch deep gash down their body. You wouldn't do that.
Unfortunately, I don't have my medical degree.
Well, you could make some really nice tracings just along the surface.
Yeah, well, he said 1-inch deep, though.
The whole scene is a trip.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful, fantastic voyage. And hopefully both parties are enjoying the ride.
And it's dealing with the biggest sex organ in your body.
Yeah.
Besides your skin.
Oh, I see you got me on that. I was going to call you out.
So, I know you are.
That's right. Since Chrissy did let the cat out of the bag, I'll share a scene with you. I was at a party out on the left coast. I was there with my submissive. There was a spanking bench in one of the rooms, and I went in there, and I told her to get down on all four on the bench. I pulled out some alcohol, and I made sure I poured it onto a paper towel right near where she could breathe it, and she could tell that there was alcohol, obviously, by the smell. And then I took it and I wiped around a little area on her butt, and then I pulled my knife out and I made the famous click that you just heard right by her ear, so she knew exactly what I was up to. And then I started carving on her butt with a credit card.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
And she was just mm-hmm. convinced that I was cutting her down to the bone.
Mm-hmm. It's great. It's a wonderful mind fuck.
And then to follow it up, I took a red magic marker and I traced out the area so that you could see this red imprint. And it was just low enough on the butt that you couldn't quite see it in the mirror if you're standing in the bathroom. However, I did make it a point to show it off to a number of the people in the party, and they complimented me on a very nice job, and this just ran the headspace off the top for her.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Scenes like that are great. Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, I remember a scene that was shared with me where the audience was the one that was mind-fucked. The bottom was positioned, again, on spanking bench with their bottom away from the audience. The top then proceeded to heat branding irons, and he applied the branding iron to a cut of steak that was skillfully hidden from the audience. And you have that nice sizzle. And
complete
that
with smoke.
Smoke and yeah. everything.
Burning flesh.
And he had already put the bottom supposedly in such headspace that she was willing to do anything. And he caught a lot of flack for when the some members of the audience left and retching and vomiting.
Wow. Good scene.
I call that a very successful scene.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we all wish for something like that. And it's planning that you got to have all the toys just right.
Yep. And the scene starts way before you ever set foot in that dungeon. It's hours, days, weeks sometimes.
Setting the stage.
Mm.
I know that with my submissive, when she's at work in the morning and I say, tonight is the night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I have to say.
And the rest of it goes. Uh-huh.
There was, 2012, I was doing a scene. We set up the dungeon with plastic sheeting and drapes and made the Dexter kill room and proceeded to play a scene, and we had everybody's full attention. The bottom's headspace was perfect. We used a barbed wire cane, very little, disappointing little blood, but the scene was gorgeous because we had set the stage and we had brought the audience in and it flowed beautifully. The bottom was happy. I was happy. The audience was happy. So, yeah, it's you have to build the scene. It definitely wasn't a heavy scene in the end, but everybody thought it was going to be.
It's all about the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you please the mind, the body will follow.
What is it that tops or masters think about when they're doing a scene? I mean, what goes through your head before, during, and then after the scene is over?
I know what one person thinks. How many ways can I hurt this girl?
Beast, what's your answer?
My flippant answer is, do I need bread? Do I need milk? Go through the famous list that the women say they go through as during sex. That's a flippant answer.
That is very flippant, yes.
I never think that when I'm engaging in sex, unless the guy's a total douche. But then he doesn't last long.
I
definitely don't think about my grocery list. I might think about Tom Selleck or someone really hot looking.
But to be more precise in the answer, I am at that moment looking at the bottom, looking at the submissive, look at my play partner, and studying them. So what's going through my mind is going to be different with each person, but I'm looking for weaknesses, strengths, factors that will enable me to carry this scene to a deeper, more intense level. If I go in with preconceived notions of what I want to achieve and I doggedly pursue those preconceptions, I often will have a failing scene. If I go in with notions of what I want to accomplish, but am fluid enough to make adjustments to the scene as the situation unfolds, I find I have a much more successful scene. So what's going through my mind is going to vary from second to second as my bottom is changing and evolving.
So you make adjustments to move along with it.
It's a constant fluid space. If you let go of the mind, the mind is going to snap back to the present, the reality. So you have to keep constant hold of that mind, and that means you have to be constantly taking into account what's going on in the physical, what's going on in the environment around, and use that to keep your hooks firmly planted in that mental space that I'm so enjoy playing in.
How are you wanting to end the evening? I mean, is it a sexual thing with you or is it just the scene itself?
Ideally, for me, would be in perfect world, would be with a raising orgasm for all parties involved and a emotional experience that brings two people closer together. In reality, most of the time, it is the end goal is to have an emotional experience that has physical elements that bring the two people closer together.
And Woody, what about you? What goes through your mind? Because everybody's different.
I'm a planner by nature. And so I will start on a scene and determine what I need to do a particular scene. I may start days in advance. I may have to build something for a scene, get everything staged, start the mental preparation, the tease, bring it up, bring it along, get the scene right to where it starts, have a good time in the scene. And then I believe in a lot of physical bonding and during the scene, skin contact, find where the submissive's head is going and then try to lead to a conclusion. If I'm looking to take someone to subspace to pave the road in that direction, if we're just going to have some fun, some sensual play, it's kind of where I'll plan out where I'd like the scene to go. And then as the scene starts to react, then I may take a left or a right turn as I go down and I'll have a couple different scenarios for the end play. But as B says, raging orgasms for all involved is a very nice way to end a scene. And then everybody collapsing locked onto each other, covered up with a blanket, and just really cool down for half an hour.
Or the rest of the night.
Or however, depending on where you are.
I need a scene, please.
I don't know. You're over there lighting up already.
Yeah, after today.
Are you getting hot and bothered, Chrissy?
I'm usually pretty hot, and now I'm a little bit bothered.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's going back the sound she heard earlier.
Uh-huh.
Subspace. Or slave space, or I don't know, what is the word?
Space.
Space.
The final frontier.
And right. What about top space or dominant space? Is that something you experience top drop?
Oh, yeah. I watched it happen.
I do experience top drop, and after a scene, I'm good for about 10 minutes, and then I am going down fast.
And for those who don't know what that is, what is top drop?
During a scene, if it's a physical scene, you're expending a tremendous amount of energy, and there is a dehydration factor that goes in there. Your electrolytes become imbalanced. You've been burning calories for some time. And so your body will shift from a energy out mode to a shutdown mode. And that gets timed right around when the stress and the things that keep you up and running during a scene are over. The submissive has fallen off into a nice daze and has moved into this next stage. Then all of a sudden you back off all this giving of energy that you've had, and your body says, well, that's enough, shut down. You're there maybe cleaning up a play space or something, and you feel lightheaded. You feel like, what's going on? At that point, you had better have access to some water fairly quickly. I know in my case, I need to get water in me very quick at that point. I've had people bring over a bottle of water and hand it to me in a public space and say, I think you need this, because I did not have the judgment at that point. And that's scary. I have the submissive life in my hands, mm-hmm. and my judgment is starting to fail. Not a good combination. And that's why we have DMs, dungeon monitors, in play spaces to keep an eye on people and see how they're playing and if they're playing in control or out of control.
And that's another show altogether.
Altogether. For me, I have a very interesting cycle. When I go into a play space, a public play space, I like to begin playing early. Like Woody, once I stop play, I start dropping. My energy levels start waning. So if I have a break in between sessions of more than a half hour or something, I'm going to be useless for the rest of the night. My energy, I have raised it up to a level, and I need to keep that level up, because once that level drops, I just don't have the recovery time. And rarely do I have multiple scenes in one evening of late because of just the fact of having to start and keep going. It's great when it happens, but the more likely I have one scene and then I am needing to recharge the batteries for a period of time.
Would you consider playing more than one submissive on a night, having lengthy scenes, irresponsible on the Dom's part?
I think it's relative to the Dom and what they can handle. In my case, as long as I keep the energy level up, I'm good to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's when I relax and let the energy level drop that I become lethargic and less attentive to the details that are needed to play. As long as the energy level stays up, mm-hmm. I'm fine. But once it starts falling, it's done. Recently, I was with one of my partners out at the local play space, and we were trying to play. And finding a space to play that evening was somewhat awkward. And by the time we got a space, it was so late. And I had been trying to keep the energy at the proper level that I was tapped out before we got a chance to play. It was frustrating for everybody concerned. I was a bit frustrated with the management for the management of their play stations. I thought that they didn't manage them well that night, but it's their space. And I was frustrated for my part for not being able to realize a special evening with my partner.
And no matter how much planning you do, you're going to run into the realities of life to where a scene just doesn't come together sometimes.
Definitely, that is the realities, particularly when you're sharing space with other people. You have their plans, and they probably haven't shared their plans with you, and they probably haven't shared their plans with everybody else in the room. So you can have conflicting goals, conflicting plans, conflicting situations.
We've started talking tonight about labels, and we've moved from labels, just flowed, let's see, from labels to roles, tops, mm-hmm. bottoms. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about top space.
Headspace.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of getting into scenes now, too. We've talked about that. Well, we talk about bad scenes. That could be a whole episode on its own.
Well, we do have a series coming up called BDSM Nightmares. Last week, there was two examples of nightmares. When somebody has a BDSM nightmare and wants to tell the story, it can be really interesting because it's a learning situation for a lot of people. Geez, I hope I never do that. You know, things to watch out for.
Woody, I know something about these nightmares that we have been gathering. Typically, they're happening to the new people.
I think everybody is going to experience that in, what I say, the first 2 years.
Oh, no, wait a minute. No.
I said typically, but your reception?
No, I was much older. I thought I was the bomb, and I got involved with someone that I did not know well. There's the key. Did not know well, and wanted a rough scene, and wanted some rough sex. And I was traveling, and I was in a hotel. I was 300 miles from my house. The scene got too rough, and I got hit in the face very hard a couple of times. Ended up dislocating my retina.
Ooh.
And I didn't know it. The guy left, and I'm in the hotel room, and my eye swelled shut. And then my other eye, in sympathy, swelled shut. And I said, oh, shit, I can't see. When I could finally get out of the hotel room, I limped across the parking lot to a fire station that happened to be there and asked the firemen, the paramedics, I said, dude, you know, what's wrong with my eye? And they said, oh, you're cool. Put some ice on it here. And I sat there for a half hour and they said, you'll be fine. It'll be okay. So I limped back to my hotel room. Now, remember, one eye is totally swollen shut. The other eye is in sympathy trying to close. So I'm holding that one open with two fingers so I can see. The sun is glaring. I got back in my hotel room. I ended up staying there 3 days. I couldn't leave the hotel room because I couldn't see to drive. I couldn't see. I had to have people bring me food. I couldn't go out to a restaurant. It was terrible, and it was just because I didn't know the guy well. You know, we didn't negotiate. I just said, come on, let's do it. And he said, cool, and look what happened.
I think we've all had private hotel scenes. I hear Lee laughing over there because she has a story that she's going to tell in the Nightmares episode, and we all want to hear that one because I've had a preview and I know what it is. It has to do with a hotel room and meeting somebody there. I cannot say that I've never done that. I have been the top and invited a submissive to my hotel room and had a scene. Yes, I'm guilty.
You know, everybody always talks about scenes gone bad and, oh, the poor submissives. But scenes go bad and, oh, the poor tops.
Yeah.
It goes the other way, too.
It does.
After that happened, I had talked to a dominant master, old school leather, you know, where they have all the rules. Anyways, I talked to this man and he says, I'm going to send you this contract and I want you to, you know, look over each item. There was like 140 some odd items that I had to memorize, which was just not something I was going to do.
Lee, you mean he took the 121 slave rules and expanded upon it?
Yes, he did. And then he says, and then I will meet you at a public restaurant. Now, this is why I like the man, is because he was very safe himself. He said, I will meet you in a public space and I will have my safety person with me.
Ooh.
And you should do the same. So in other words, that has always stuck with me. So if I didn't have someone to take with me to meet a dominant, like a girlfriend, I would meet the dominant, but I'd ask to see his driver's license. And if he wouldn't show me his driver's license, and a lot of them won't, I'd say, see ya.
That's something I learned, too. After that, I still don't like to ask for a driver's license. I'll do it, but I just don't like it. It makes me feel... I don't know what it makes me feel like. I'll walk by a car and take a picture of their license plate.
No, I want him to know that I know who he is and that I'm sharing that information with my safety person. And so should you. Yeah. So should everybody. Yeah, and an easy way to do that is to say, tell you what, why don't we share driver's license? I'll show you mine. You show me yours. You can give my information to whomever is your safety person. And why would you not expect the dominant, the one you're giving yourself to be safe? Or want you to be safe.
You know, that is probably the most logical thing that I've ever heard, because there is the thing of women crying rape the next day. Mm-hmm. And it makes a whole difference if people know that there was a scene there that night, safety people knowing that there was a scene going on. It takes some of the sting out of it, because crazy works both ways.
Absolutely.
But sometimes I don't want anybody to know. I just want to do it, go.
And if you are wanting to fly, there's going to be those that argue, I just want
some strange
sex. I don't want to give them my home address. And if you're willing to live with the potential results,
do it.
I say do it, but you have to really analyze all the potential results that could come your way.
They could be deadly.
Yes, death is one of them.
Or
they could be end up like that.
With your legs in the air.
Yeah. And I don't mean to scare our listeners, to scare them straight. There are hundreds and thousands probably of good scenes that happen, tens of thousands even, of good scenes that occur for every bad scene that happens. While we have many people, they'll be sharing their nightmares with us. Those same people have hundreds of successful scenes under their belts, and they survive their nightmare experience. Does that mean that they want to repeat that nightmare? Probably not. Mm. Does that mean that there's not things that can be learned from those nightmares? Definitely, they are things to be learned. And the tops, again, they are at great risk.
But you know, when our body's talking to us, we'll do some crazy stuff. I will probably be one of those who will take that chance again if my body's talking to me, you know, you need to go.
Well, women have a little head just like men. And actually, the women's little heads are smaller than the men's little heads. I'm going to get some calls on that.
I can tell you are. Well, as we bring this topic to a close, I want to tell a story. A Dome friend of mine in the Los Angeles area, she has had men chasing her for years, submissive men going, play with me, please play with me. And so she looks them square in the eye and she says, hand me your wallet. And then there's silence and a shocked look, deer in the headlight look. And they go, why? She says, you'll put your life in my hands, but you won't put your wallet in my hands? Think about that.
Because it's a game. To them, it's a game.
It is, but it's a life and death game.
Mm-hmm. Separates the men from the boys, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Beast, should we dig into that mailbag?
Yes, Woody, we should dig into that mailbag.
I have a question from our bashful box. A woman writes, how do you find people of like minds? I know I have these urges to be with someone who will take control of me in the bedroom. I have no desire to go out to the local dungeon because I am a very private person and I don't want to put myself out there in the public eye. How can I meet someone in a safe way? I do have a girlfriend that is in the lifestyle and she and I talk, but she doesn't know anyone cause she's brand new as well. How do we find munches and training classes, etc.? I desperately need your advice. Thank you.
Well, Woody, I will start with that as a munch host. For many years now, munches in the age of the internet and FET and various other venues are very easy to find if someone just takes a little time to go online, create a profile, and just ghost the local community and watch what's going on. They will rapidly find the munches.
How do you find a local community?
Well, in today's world of the internet, most of your services, be it alt.com, FetLife, CollarMe, any of the others that are out there, but those are the main kink ones.
Probably FetLife more than any right now.
Fet more than any. They all have locators that you can identify what neighborhood you're in, at least what city you're in and the state. And that will bring up a whole list of kinksters in your same city for you to befriend. And you can, most of them will be open to just friendship with a person that they know little about, because it's just for them. They are community minded and they're out to help other people. So they'll let you watch their activity, and their activity will lead you to other things. It's social networking in the internet age.
And then once you discover a munch, I would go to the munch master and ask who can provide me with training information or even mentoring.
Definitely your munch host is often, not always, is often a good point source for the community. If they don't know the answers, they most likely will know the person who knows the answers. As a host, I know I will often be on the lookout for new faces in our monthly gathering. I will reach out to those people, find out why they're there, what they're looking for, and often point them to another person that I know, that I feel safe with, that can give them more information about that particular topic.
That does it for another episode of the Kinky Cast. And on behalf of our lovely guests tonight, Miss Chrissy.
Good night.
And Miss Lee.
Have a great one.
And Beast, we'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week, Woody. And we have a couple of exciting things coming to our listeners in the coming weeks.
Hi, this is Susan Wright. I'm looking forward to talking to all of you about consent camps and the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. Please join us.
That's next week, right here on the Kinky Cast. Don't forget to submit for the BDSM Nightmares.
You have been listening to Episode 8 of the Kinky Cast. We want to hear from you. We also want to hear your BDSM nightmares. So email us, questions@kinkycast.com, or call and leave a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. If you leave a contact number, we will try to reach you to join us on the show. Some listeners want to remain completely anonymous, so we have the Bashful tab on our webpage. Just type your message and hit send. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and Cassie, I'm Max. See you next week.